Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for WNBA star Caitlin Clark, who, as you all know, has already been under our watchful eye for some time because of her noticeable silence on so many of the issues we, the people of the Holy Acronym String, care so much about. We recently canceled her Indiana Fever teammate Sophie Cunningham due to her hateful, transphobic comments that women's sports is not a place for biological men. As a result of that act of verbal violence, there have sadly been demonstrators celebrating Cunningham, which prompted Seattle Storm co-owner Celeste Keaton to call some of those supporters bleeping insane outside a game against the Fever. Sadly, the WNBA then suspended Keaton for 5 games. As a follow-up, during a press conference this week, a reporter asked Caitlin Clark how she and her teammates have been navigating this topic in their locker room.
I think for us, it's not really a discussion we really have in our locker room. I think it's for leagues and the governing bodies to work with their athletes to find solutions, but our focus is on basketball, and that's what we talk about and how we can get wins, and obviously we didn't do that tonight, so we need to find an area to improve in that way.
Oh, dear Otherin, this is really, really bad. Now, I know at first glance it might seem like she didn't say anything problematic at all. In fact, she seemed to entirely avoid giving her opinion about athletes identified male at birth competing in women's sports. But that is the problem here. It was precisely her choice to not answer the question and not take a stand that is so outrageous. Silence is worse than heresy. Yes, it was bad when the Duchess of finger-pointing herself, Sophie Cunningham, took the wrong side on this vital human rights issue, but at least in so doing, she validated both the importance of the subject and the necessity of all humans expressing their views on everything all the time. By saying nothing, Caitlin was either declaring the subject isn't important enough to talk about, or that athletes should focus on playing sports and not comment on polarizing no-win social matters, or both. And when the reporter bravely followed up, kindly offering Clark a chance to atone for her sin of silence, she dismissed him even more rudely.
Did you have any, reaction to the...
I just answered for you.
Ugh. In doing this, Clark is actually going even harder in the wrong direction. She's basically saying, my non-answer is my answer. She's almost scolding him by implying that people hired to play a sport should just do that task without making it political or using their platform to bend the arc of the no-dunks universe toward justice. We obviously disagree with Cunningham, but at least she's playing our game of treating trans rights as a subject all athletes should comment on. Clark isn't even dignifying this with a response, a dismissal far worse than any mere disagreement. The heretics who oppose DEI, our holy trinity of buzzwords, often say athletes should just shut up and dribble instead of engaging in social commentary, as if being an athlete is about playing sports and not about transfiguring your physical prowess into pretend expertise about politics and ethics. Clark is embracing this advice, in essence saying, let me just shut up and dribble, which is exactly the problem. As a straight white female basketball star, we expect her to admit her privilege, apologize for her whiteness, admit that being straight is the result of heteronormative oppression, and use her fame to advance our racial, sexual, and gender causes, making her at least an ally of the rainbow, if not a rainbow person herself. As you all know, Flatick's third doctrine of identity politics teaches us that we are all obligated to take a stance on everything we believe in at all possible times, for it is our issues that make us who we are, and who we are is nothing if we don't let politics saturate everything. So for committing a grave sin, a true spiritual felony, premeditated, first degree, keeping your opinion to yourself, with contempt for the court of progressive opinion, Caitlin Clark, we cast thee out. May the flames of our fury spark in you a burning fever of repentance. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, retired Air Force Major General Dr. Mark Brown, President and CEO of Alabama's Tuskegee University. Now, you know that normally we would almost never consider canceling a black president of a historically black college or university. But when you hear what Brown has done for you lately, I think you'll agree this is necessary. This week, the president of this HBCU announced in a note to all students the institution of a new policy for campus attire. He told the young adults they are now, quote, prohibited from wearing revealing clothes in class. They're also not able to wear bedroom shoes, bonnets, or do-rags in class or the cafeteria. Also banned are hats, headscarves, caps, hoods, bandanas, or any other head coverings and sunglasses. They can't wear short shorts, swimsuit bottoms, bodysuits, sleeveless undershirts, and even t-shirts worn as dresses and sagging pants are not permitted. Baggy or loose-fitting pants must be worn with a belt that fits around the waist. The code even requires full business attire at professional events like job fairs. I'll pause while you consider how serious this is. This black retired general has just banned virtually every element of black youth clothing from being worn at a black university. A member of the Proud Boys could hardly have done a more thorough job of writing this dress code. But why is this so important? Because he's basically telling these young black students that they must assimilate to white cultural norms if they're going to succeed in the white business world, and he thinks this is a good thing. Look, just because Asians and Middle Easterners have long practiced cultural assimilation as a method of succeeding in the U.S., that doesn't mean that African Americans should do so. In fact, if any racial group is justified in resisting the oppression of white supremacy culture, it's the students at an HBCU. Remember, it's very important to our entire project of permanent racial division that we continue to keep black Americans feeling angry and resentful toward white Americans for past and ongoing racial injustice. But it's also very important to keep white Americans feeling guilty and ashamed of their ancestors' role in this injustice. The only way to keep both of these things going on in perpetuity is to constantly maintain a separate but equal cultural divide between blacks and whites. We need non-unity to keep preaching the importance of unity. We need separation to keep preaching the rightness of coming together. If black students fit in, get ahead, and prosper, how will we continue to keep them deprived and enslaved to the Democratic Party like we've done for 50 years? And this black general has just announced to the world that American black culture has a professionalism problem that isn't the fault of Whitey, but it's the fault of his own people. How dare he? How can these students go into white professional spaces, reject dominant cultural norms, demand accommodations, and perpetuate racial resentment for refusing to fit in if they simply agree to fit in? It's outrageous, and Brown must go. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal, and go forth and transgress no more.